Welcome to Death Hauler, Season 5, When Bad Animals Go Bad. With your hosts, the Reverend Dr. Death and Lyraina. This season will include love.
Do you know how your husband died?
Oh, yes. I killed him.
Transformations. And certified good boys and girls.
Cujo, what are you growling at?
Remember, when you're in Death Hauler, listener discretion is always advised.
Let's go bad, dang!
Everyone, welcome back to Death Hauler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always, my co-host, Lyraina, and this is Cujo from 1983. Tagline, now there's a new name for terror.
Aww, I like it.
And then, of course, that's over top of Cujo in big letters. You know?
Yes, love it.
Directed by Lewis Teague, written by Stephen King, obviously, Don Carlos Dunaway and Barbara Turner, music by Charles Bernstein, which... The music, I'm going to jump ahead, is one of my biggest gripes about this movie. It makes it seem like a made-for-TV special. We'll cover that more in a little bit, but I'm just saying. Made for a budget of $6 million, made a box office of 21.2, so it made some decent money.
It did pretty good.
Yeah. For Uraina's sake, I have included the names of the only two names that they know of the five dogs that were used to play Cujo.
Aww.
Moe and Cubby.
Oh, two were, certified good boys.
The other names were lost to history, so there you go.
How dare they?
Also amongst principal players of the humans in the movie, the humans, we have Dee Wallace playing Donna Trenton, mother, adulterer, and filled with rabies.
Baby rabies.
Dee Wallace has been on this show numerous times already and will continue to be on this show for like a while after.
She's in the season alone. Yeah, that's going to be this season.
That's going to be this season. She's in Critters, which is going to be in the future. E.T., obviously not a movie we'll cover, but she was in that. She was in an episode of Supernatural.
Damn.
She was in the House of the Devil at the beginning of it. She was the lady that was renting out the house, if you remember that, right before... You know, the song that Uraina loves started playing. Halloween 2007, which we covered in slasher season. That's Rob Zombie one. And another movie that I don't think we've covered this season, but Alligator 2, The Mutation. It's another When Bad Animals Go Bad.
I think we have Alligator. Yeah, we have. So in May, we have Alligator. I put 1/2. I don't know that we'll get to 2, but, you know, we'll see.
If we do, there's another one she'll be in. And, of course, The Frighteners, which we covered.
Oh, wow.
Because she was the psycho girl that was dating the death, as it were, in the movie. So Dee Wallace is a certified alum in horror. I mean, like, she just is. And she's a certified mother in the 80s because every movie she was in, Critters, E.T., this movie, she was the mom in those movies, every single one of them. Danny Pintaro plays Tad Trenton, the traumatized child in the heart of the movie, the one that's supposed to make you care about the situation. Most people remember him from 196 episodes of Jesus. Who's the Boss?
Damn.
He played Angela's son in that TV show, if you ever watched Who's the Boss. But Who's the Boss also gave us, what's her name? Alyssa Milano.
Yeah.
Which, don't get me wrong, hot as hell back during the Charmed years.
Yeah.
But, oh, my God, is she a dumbass in real life.
Yeah.
Like, had crocheted mask on during COVID. Now, if you thought that like a regular mask wouldn't do much for stopping COVID, just imagine crocheted.
Yeah.
You know, just anyways, Daniel Hugh Kelly plays Vic Trenton, who's an ad salesman, the jilted husband, and a pretty good dad, actually. Of all the movie, like, it's funny because if you watch any kind of like television media from like 1990s on, like, dads were usually dumbasses that the moms had to, like, basically take care of as well as the kids.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a perfect example. That's Tim the Toolman Taylor.
Oh, my God.
From Home Improvement. He kind of started the trend, even though I know that Tim Allen is a more base conservative in real life. Like, he helped usher in that era that men are just bad fathers. But Vic Trenton in this movie is actually a good dad. He takes care of his son. He, you know, yeah. he's, I mean, he, you know, and he's actually, despite the fact that he finds out his wife's cheating on him, he doesn't, like, you know, do anything in front of the son to, you know, cause any disturbance. He just lets her know, I'm not cool with this, you know.
I am letting you know right now, if my husband came home from a trip, whether I had cheated on him or not, and he found me and the kids missing, I would be gone forever. He would not be like, oh, yeah, I sent her to that mechanic. First of all, he's a mechanic, so that'd be something completely interesting. But even if he knew I went to go one of his friends because he was out of town, it's like, oh, well, you know, go see so-and-so. And I got trapped up there, or it'd be 2 to 3 business days before he's like, well, where did she go? Did she go on a trip or something? Oh, guess I'll turn on my video game.
So you're saying that Vic was even better in that sense because he at least tried looking for him.
Okay, yeah, he would try calling me, but I don't know how much effort would go into looking for me.
Well, I guess the bitch is dead. Let's go. Yeah. Let's play some games.
Hope my daughter's alive.
Daniel Hugh Kelly will return during Human Horror season because he's in The Good Son.
Oh, so there yeah. you go.
He's also in The Monkey's Paw from 2013, and he too was in an episode of Supernatural.
Here we imagine go. That. Yep.
Christopher Stone plays Steve Kemp. Friend, question mark, to Vic? I wouldn't say that. Friend, dot, to dot, Donna. Dot, to yeah. Donna, however, oh. yes.
Oh, my God.
You know what's funny about that? Steve Kemp was actually Dee Wallace's real-life husband.
Oh, wow.
Until he died of a heart attack in, like, whenever it was, like, 80s. Or like the 90s or whatever, 96 Damn. Or something like that. So it's funny. She was cheating on her movie husband with her real husband.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Kemp was in The Howling, so he'll make a return this season. Yeah. Funny that he was also in The Howling with his wife.
Oh, yeah.
Ed Lauder plays Joe Camber, mechanic and proud dog owner.
Aw.
He was in King Kong from 76, which I don't know when King Kong, I don't, what season would that even fall under? I don't want to do a kaiju season, maybe a monster season just in general.
Yeah, but is that even a horror?
King Kong is, I mean, in the 76 when he rips people apart.
It oh, was hell yeah. So. It would be this season technically.
I don't know. He's a giant monkey, though. He's but not he's like
still okay, but we have monkey or not monkeys. We have wolves. That have been weared.
Yeah, but I mean, werewolves, oh, werewolves, you know, the ones that are recognize the universe and are at peace with it, you know.
I think King Kong would go in this season.
It could, but I really do think it needs to be a monster season with critters.
Okay.
So maybe we can have them. We could have, you know, Joe Camber, you know, Ed Lauder, as it were, come back in the same season as Dee Wallace again. There you go.
Oh, God.
He was in Not Another Teen Movie. I think he played the coach in that movie. If you've ever seen pictures of Ed Lauder, he always plays a bad guy because he's got that face of somebody who's like an evildoer. Yeah. He was in The Rocketeer, and he was in The Town That Dreaded Sundown, which is funny because we just said in the last movie that I believe it was the lady who played the daughter in that or that movie, the young girl, she was also in The Town That Dreaded Sundown for 2014. So that's a little bit of connection between the two movies.
Yeah.
Kaiulani Lee plays Charity Camber, lottery winner and country girl. She's got a little bit of accent in this movie, a little bit put on for. It's funny to me that these movies, I don't think they specifically say that this set in Maine, but you know, all Stephen King's movies are set in Maine. I don't know how the fuck she gets that kind of a country accent in Maine. Just saying, just throwing it out there, you know, and the post office guy, the mailman, he has like a New England accent. So I don't know why hers is so thick. And it's funny too, because with that name, Kailuani or Kailani Lee, that sounds Hawaiian to me. It's got too many vowels in it. So she's a Hawaiian playing a Southern chick in a movie that's set in Maine.
Yeah, but they look like they were out in the country, but I'm like, did he pick her from the country? Like, did he actually get her in a country location and they moved there?
Well, she went to her sister's house, and they show the sister's house, and it's on the coast of Maine. So it don't make any sense, folks.
Family migration, I guess, because, I mean, shit, my family brought their Texas accent to California and kept it.
Well, a lot of people from Appalachia take their accent to other places, too, but it's just, she doesn't look like somebody from this part of the country. I'm just throwing it out there, you know. Anyways, Billy Jane plays Brett Kamer, who loves baseball, and his dog, the good old boy, boy Cujo. He was also in The Burbs, which will be in Human Horror Season during the Burbs. April Fools.
Yes.
Yeah. Beastmaster and the movie Superstition. Mills Watson plays Gary Pervier. Pervier sounds better for him.
Yeah.
Who's the neighbor who is not a dog person at all.
Well, Cujo wasn't a person with him either.
No, he wasn't.
Or person dog, I should say.
And then rounding out the humans in this movie, we have Sandy Ward, who plays Sheriff Bannerman, who you can't teach a old dog new tricks. He just doesn't have what it takes to fight old Cujo. He's just kind of there. And I'll get into why I left Sheriff Bannerman in this. This actually ties to another Stephen King movie/book, because that character is also in something else, played by a different actor. He was in The Perfect Storm, Airplane 2, the sequel, and the movie Under Siege.
Interesting.
Synopsis. The Trentons seem like the perfect middle-class family. Nice home, cute kid, and a good marriage. Well, maybe not that last one. Anyways... When Vic Trenton needs some repairs done on his car, he is introduced to the Kambers and their large St. Bernard Cujo. Seemingly a scary dog, Cujo is just a big softy that wouldn't hurt anyone.
Sure
wouldn't have if he hadn't got bit by a rabid bat and contracted rabies. Now, Donna and Tad Trenton will experience several days of sheer terror in the brutal heat of summer as they are stalked by that sick canine. Will they survive until Vic arrives? Will Sheriff Bannerman save the day? The same way he helped bring serial killer Frank Dodd to justice. And that's my little link to the other movie I will discuss. This is the other tagline. His bite is worse than his bark.
Aww.
Much, much worse.
That's a good tagline.
Some more taglines. Who let the dog out?
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Unleash the terror. You get it? Unleash. This one's too long, did not like. From Stephen King's novel comes a chilling tale of a quiet New England town and the horrible evil in the dead of summer.
Jesus, no.
Iconic terror from the number one best-selling writer.
No.
Sit, roll over, play dead, bad dog.
It's funny, but it doesn't...
Yeah. I like Unleash the Terror myself. I like the pun that's in that one.
Unleash the Terror. I did like his bite is worse than his bark.
Quotes, Vic Trenton, there are no real monsters, Tad Trenton, except for the one in my closet.
The one in your closet. Now be still and lay down before it sees you.
Joe Kamer, you better watch it, Pervier. Joe looks down and pats Cujo. Joe Kamer, I'll sick my dog on you. Gary, that dog, you couldn't sick that dog on me if I was coming at you with a straight razor in each hand. Well, Gary, you're proven wrong, bitch. And then, of course, Donna Trenton and her ultimate moment. Fuck you, dog.
Yeah. And her car dies.
Yeah. All right. Visually. Cujo's one of those movies that if you watch it as a kid, it looms way larger in your head than it actually is as a movie. I got to throw that out there first because I watched this because my aunt was a psychopath. In reality, she was a psychopath. And... She actually came after my grandpa one time with a butcher knife through a screen door.
Wow.
And he and my grandma held her back while he took me, my cousin, and my sister and walked us down the road to get us away from all that.
Oh, my God.
So when I say that my aunt was a psychopath, I'm not lying when I say this. But she showed me this movie whenever I was a little kid, and it fucked me up. It fucked me up bad. just and for years, like, I really had like this image of Cujo just being like this demon dog. Like,
oh my god. Mind. That's so funny. I saw this as a little kid as well, and I always felt so bad for Cujo. I mean, bad for the mom and her son too. Don't get me wrong.
It makes sense that you would feel that way about it. All I can remember is just that dog, like, just rah, 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 like that's, I didn't even remember the kid in the movie. That's how traumatized I was by it. I was just like, there's a car, there's a lady getting attacked by a dog, and that dog's going to get me now. That's what I thought when I watched it.
It was scary. Don't get me wrong. Like, I didn't think that it wasn't scary, because that's scary when, like, Cujo's under the car and she's walking around. Like, she's like, okay, like, can I? And she can't see him, and he's right fucking behind her. Oh, my God. It's so good. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know why at such a young age I had so much empathy for this dog that was just a fucking terror, to say the least. So, I don't know.
Well, when you go back and watch it now, there's a couple of things. First of all, like, I really do like that scene at the beginning of it where they set up him chasing the yes. rabbit, and then he goes to that, you know, back den or cave. Whatever. The bat cave. And he gets bit on the nose. Like, and then, like, when you see the dog later, and he's just fine for a little bit
yeah.
because it's percolating in his system.
Yes.
But then whenever Joe is sitting there grinding on whatever metal he's grinding mm-hmm. on, and it's so loud, and the dog's like whimpering because it's hurting his head so yeah. bad. Then I felt what you felt when you were a kid. I'm like, I feel bad for this poor dog. Like, he's sitting there suffering from this. Nobody notices. And like, his head has to be pounding.
Yes.
And like, he's having to listen to this horrible, like, grinding sound that is probably even worse for a dog than it would be for us anyway.
Yeah. You
know? Minus the headache.
Exactly. Also, Cujo shows, well, he still has his wits to him, because he can't do it forever. It's like he's turning into a zombie, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't attack his favorite human. He's able to.
Do you notice what we just did, though? In switching from zombie season to this season, we literally took the two movies where yeah. the animals are basically zombies.
Yeah, basically.
Anyways, go ahead.
No, he basically spares his favorite human. You know, he's rabid. He's wanting to attack, but then he's like, oh, that's my human. And then he just turns and walks away.
In the fog, he lets mm-hmm. Brett get away. Yeah,
yeah.
That makes sense. I don't know, like, the one thing that, like, I watched it in like 4K representation, and they did a good job with it as far as restoring it and stuff.
Yeah.
But the one thing I noticed visually is just, I felt so bad for the actual dogs that were having to act yes. under this, like the goop that they had all over him.
The foam and the slime and the, oh yeah, definitely. But it looks so good.
It looks good. And the blood and the other stuff that they put in the movie for the attacks, which it plays like a TV movie, because and I know it had been released in theaters, because Stephen King didn't start doing his miniseries on ABC yeah. until like the 90s. So, but it plays like a TV movie, because they cut away in a lot of scenes. They don't show him like actually ripping anything
yeah,
out.
Yeah, which anything. Is, I was pretty upset about that. I was like, ah, crap, wait, dude, does he actually rip him? And then I'm like, oh, man. Like, it shows the aftermath, and I was like, eh, okay. Also, though, speaking of cutaways, did you once in this movie, and watching this and rewatching it, did you ever notice my client's tail wagging?
Yes,
you two did? Times. Okay, because I looked and I didn't catch it. So
it was very obvious in one of the scenes. He was supposed to be growling at I don't know if it was Gary or if it was at Joe. I think it was Gary. And you look at him, and he looks all business on the front, mm-hmm. but then they pan behind him and that tail's wagging. Aww. I'm like, he couldn't stop his tail wagging in that scene.
Which he's a certified good boy.
And there was another scene where he was supposed to be jumping at one of them, and I saw his tail wagging behind him. Now, here's the funny thing. I looked for it every other time besides that and didn't see it, and I found out in trivia why. They tied the dog's tails down in this movie because they knew that was a thing.
Okay.
We've mentioned this before. You can't get a dog
to stop. Yeah.
to stop wagging its tail because it's doing a good job. It knows it's doing what it's supposed to do. So it's wagging it because it's happy. But you don't want it to be happy. You want that tail down because when dogs are mad, their tails are down and their, you know, their hackles are up. So, yeah. Like, they tied the, and it works every other time in the movie, but those two times. And I saw the tail wag, and I'm like, Cujo, you're a good boy, even when you're rabid.
He attacks her multiple times in the car, and it shows his back end multiple times. And I'm like, oh, his tail's down. And I didn't think of it being tied. Also, in real life, when police dogs or animals in general that are being trained for any kind of attack, I've never noticed whether or not their tails wag because they're technically doing a job. But they're being trained to attack and protect their owners.
They are, and whenever they're in attack mode, it's different. But, like, in these movies, they're not really in attack mode, and they know it. And there's, like, somebody, and the way they always get them to attack is through their favorite toy or some kind of food or something. And it's playtime for them, so they're happy. That's why they're wagging their tail, you know?
Yeah. I mean, my dogs, they speak, I always joke, Dothraki. They have an attack in Dothraki, and now I need to pay attention to see if their tails are wagging when they do it. But I don't use the... I don't say the word frequently because you don't want to play with that word. You know, that's their actual attack.
Yeah, that needs to be saved for that specific or they'll get out of the habit of having that meaning for them.
Oh, my God.
The movie was early 80s, so it still has that 70s look to it. I mean, you know, that's what people don't. It's fine. The thing is I find funny, if you watch any kind of like throwback 80s nostalgia bait type TV show, they'll set a movie in like the early 80s and then they'll have all that neon shit and all that stuff. And if you grew up in the 80s, you're like, A, if you're in the poorest part of the country, it never got to that point. It was only in the bigger cities. And B, it looked like the 70s for like half the 80s before the 80s got their own identity. So it's not really realistic when you watch like an 80s nostalgia bait movie or show now when they show like 1983 and you go back and you're like, where's the wood paneled walls? Where's the, you know, the orange shag carpet? It's like, well, that was the 70s. No, dipshit. It was, but it held over.
In the 80s, they just were like, let's get neon carpet.
Like instantly. Were like, let's get pastel colors and let's get physical, you know, like that. That's not what happened.
No,
it was 85 whenever they made the switch over. For anybody who's too young to know, 85 was the cutoff when the 80s actually got that 80s look that everybody remembers. Yeah. It was 85. It was anything before that. It looked like the 70s. It just did.
Absolutely. Visually, since we're kind of still in that, aside from this, you know, 70s look, which, you know, we just discussed. And of course, what Cujo looks like. I think they did a good job casting this kid because he already looked sickly before he even became sickly in the movie.
Yeah.
So I think that worked out to their benefits. The makeup, it became to be a bit much when they had to put the purple around his eyes. And I get it. There was times when it looked good. I think that's more when he was sweating because women have this thing that they do when they put on their makeup. After we're done putting on a full face, a full beat is what it's called, is you put on a setting spray, whether that be in the texture of hairspray, because there is setting sprays that are like hairspray. Your makeup ain't going anywhere with that. Or there's more of a setting spray to kind of like get everything to settle in. So if you have a powdery, matte looking face, etc., it will get that. I think that's what happened is that the kid had this matte looking face going on where the makeup was sitting too much on the outside of his skin. And then once he was sweating, quotation mark, because obviously they're in this hot metal tin can of a vehicle.
Spoiler alert, they actually filmed this in a very cold time in May in that area. So it was they were actually putting heaters on in between scenes.
But that's hella funny. But yeah, so the sweat will act as kind of a setting, if you will. It'll help things kind of settle in. And I think that's when his sickly makeup started looking better, is when he kind of looked like he was sweating.
Yeah, I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to that because I'll tell you why. I kept thinking, I'm like, in the book version of this, the kid dies.
Oh, shit. I also heard the book version was harder in the sense that I guess you could hear the dog's thoughts or read the dog's thoughts.
I think it describes it. It's like, you know, it goes in the Cujo mode and it's like he, you know, it describes like the pain that he's like in, like, you know, and all that other stuff. So you get like both sides.
He's like a doggy Darth Vader.
But yeah, knowing that the kid dies and I'm sitting there the entire time watching that and I'm like, they didn't have the balls to do it in the movie. Mm-mm. They just didn't. And then Stephen King went back years later and he's like, I shouldn't have killed the kid in the book either. So I'm like, I think that it had more punch, the fact that the kid died, because all that hell, I mean, it is so, it's brutal to think about. Don't get me wrong. But all that hell that Donna Trenton goes through, and she is fully infected with rabies. Let's not leave that out of it. She was bitten by the dog. She's fully infected by rabies, and her son still fucking dies after all that she went through.
She went through, yeah.
And her son doesn't even, here's a kicker in the book. Her son doesn't even die from the dog. He dies because he's been in the car so long under such heat that he dies of exposure.
Yes.
Like, that is such a kick in the fucking teeth.
Oh, 100%. Because that's what he was dying from in the movie.
Yeah, and then you watch the movie, and, like, he somehow comes out of it because a little bit of water, and she breathes into his mouth. And I'm like, that's the Hollywood ending. I mean, like, it is. I get it. But, like, at the same time, the book has so much more, like, oomph to it because, like, she went through all that hell, and literally, just like in real life, sometimes you go through the hell and there's no good resolution. There just isn't.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I did, I know we're jumping to the ending just a little too quickly here, but I did appreciate it because it does show what a mom will do to try to save her child. Now, I have a problem, and I've always had a problem with this. This woman is covered in rabid dog slobber, rabid dog blood, everything. And she doesn't even rinse her hands. She grabs water immediately from the faucet and just
pours it in her hand and then slops it in his mouth. Yes. Yeah.
Disgusting. Now, does this kid, can the kid get rabies that way?
I would think so. I mean, because if it's passed through the saliva in a bite, then it would be passed through
the saliva on her hands.
Saliva that's on her hands. It's now in his mouth.
What? And I was like, and then she's rubbing slobber blood all over his body. And I was like, ugh. Like, I get it. Your time is of the essence. He's pretty much almost dead at this point. If he's not already dead, she's getting nothing from him. No vitals. And I'm like, I almost would have grabbed a cup nearby. She's probably not thinking though. She's got rabies. No, I'm just kidding. She's probably just like, I got to do whatever. I don't know. I almost would have held my kid under the faucet, you know?
Yeah. I mean, something, I mean, it, you have a good point. Like, I was thinking that myself a little bit, but I was still also thinking the kid dies, knowing that he don't in the movie, but I'm sitting there
because
I've read the book and I'm like, the kid dies, you know?
Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't read the book. No, I'm just kidding.
But as far as the story goes, I mean, it's like, and I know Stephen King based this upon, it's in the trivia, but he actually went to a mechanic and saw the mechanic's like big ass, like Rottweiler style dog or whatever it was, and got spooked by it and was like, if that bastard was mean, what would it do to somebody?
Yeah.
That's where he got the idea for Cujo. But it actually, to me, it also kind of follows the story. I mean, obviously, of Old Yeller. I mean, like, because, I mean, you know, kid has a dog. It gets bit, you know, by something with rabies. And then, like, he, you know, he has to watch as it gets sicker and sicker. And he has to put it down because it stops recognizing him as, like, you know, like his friend, his owner. You know, it's you know, it's out of its mind. Ugh. So,
man,
that's a rough movie to watch. We really got traumatized as children.
Yes, between that,
the horse and Never Ending Story. And I mean,
did you ever have to read Where the Red Fern Grows?
I don't know if I'd read it. Wasn't there a movie based upon it or something like that? I mean,
I don't know. I had to read the, I think I chose to read the book. Cause I don't know. I like to be tortured. Yeah. It's pretty bad.
But I don't know. It's kind of got that art to it. I mean, you know, you see the dog and it's even the way the movie starts out, it's like this very idyllic, you know, scene and like the sunny woods or whatever.
Yeah.
And the rabbit and the, I felt bad for the rabbit though. I don't know if you did because I'm sitting there and then Cujo's like chasing it and he almost like, you see the dog like snap it up and it's like, you're nearly snap it up in its teeth a couple times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel bad for this fucking rabbit that they had like, because if it was real and that dog was chasing, even if it was for play, that rabbit had to have been like its heart just like get ready to burst out of its chest.
It was for funsies. I don't know how they, is there trivia on how they filmed all that?
I don't think that's in the trivia, unfortunately. But and of course the bat is a puppet. I mean, you can tell when you watch the movie when it.
The bat was a paid actor.
Okay.
What was I going to ask real quick? Oh, never mind. It wasn't a question. It was a statement. the freaking, you know what? Never mind. We're going to save this for acting. We're on the story still.
All right. So I'm going to throw this in for story. This is kind of trivia. This is kind of like tangential, but so this is set in the same place as several Stephen King's other books, all the Castle Rock stories.
Yes.
We covered one already during our very first season period, which was Demon Season, the Devil Season, Needful Things. It's set in Castle Rock.
Okay.
Cujo takes place. Actually, there's a scene in Needful Things where they throw it back to Cujo. There's like one of the characters who walks by the old Camber place in Needful Things, the book, and he walks past like Cujo's old, like dilapidated doghouse, and he sees two red eyes and a dog growl, and he gets the fuck out of there. So Cujo's ghost still lives in Castle Rock.
Oh, after hell yeah.
He gets taken out. But how it tied, but the further tie in the movie and book wise is that this is kind of a sequel to Stephen King's Dead Zone, the one with Christopher Walken in it.
Okay.
So Stephen King's Dead Zone, Christopher Walken ends up in this accident, and he's got like psychic powers now, car accident or whatever it was. Well, he helps Sheriff Bannerman, the same one that's in this movie, just played by a different actor. It's Tom Skerritt in the movie version of Dead Zone. He helps Sheriff Bannerman find a serial killer in Castle Rock that's been terrorizing the place for years by the name of Frank Dodd, and he uses his psychic powers to figure it out, because the reason that they never could figure it out was because it was actually the deputy. It was Sheriff Bannerman's second command who was killing ever all these people, but he was covering it up after the fact because he had access to the crime scene. And so when Johnny, shakes his hand at one point in the movie, he gets these psychic images of Frank Dodd killing all these people. And so that's how they catch the killer. Well, in the book version of Cujo, they mention Frank Dodd. They say he's a ghost that lives in Tad Trenton's closet.
Ew.
And furthermore, it's assumed in the book that not only is Cujo rabid, it's more so implied that Frank Dodd's ghost takes over Cujo's body, and so that's why he attacks everybody.
My client is innocent.
It's the ghost of a disembodied serial killer.
Oh my God. I don't like that. I understand the rabies. I understand the ghost taking over Cujo. I don't like that.
It's not really said, yeah. I mean, blatantly, it's just kind of like thrown in there. But I like the fact that the thing that Tad is so scared of in the movie with the closet is the ghost of that serial killer that haunted that, that was haunting that town. I think that's a cool link between the two books.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Interesting. I do like the red eyes theories where Cujo's ghost is still.
And Needful Things, it's very apparent because they don't say Cujo, but they mention Joe Camber and how he was killed, him and his wife, while his wife was out of town, and she took the lottery money and started up a new life or whatever. And then it goes on to say that the main character who's in that area, who's kind of a dirtbag anyways, when he walks past the doghouse, he sees the two red eyes and hears the growling, and he gets the fuck out of there. Yeah. And I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, question. And this is story slash almost trivia. And if it's in trivia, I don't want it answered yet. But do we know where the name Cujo came from?
Yes.
Okay. So that's in trivia?
Yes.
Okay. Don't want to talk about it.
Unless I took it out, but I think I left it in there.
If not, we'll find it and we'll discuss it. The reason why I don't know why I always think about this is I don't know. I have never met another animal in my lifetime named Cujo. Have you? Where anyone took the name from the movie and named their dog. Like, I've heard of cats named Salem.
I have seen people who took the name and like a junkyard dog named it Cujo. Yes, aww, I've seen that.
I love that. Okay.
But as far as the story goes, I'll tell you this, something that I found interesting about this movie, despite the fact that it's filmed like a made-for-TV, special or whatever, in a lot of cases, there's a lot of implied stuff in this movie that is really odd, given the fact that like nowadays, like they have to spell everything out. Like it cuts instantly from Dee Wallace being like this, typical housewife, with her husband, the perfect middle-class family, to her being in bed with his best friend. And it doesn't say anything. It doesn't bring it up. It's just her in bed with that guy. And you're like, she's fucking around on this guy.
Hussy.
And it's like, but you know what I'm saying? Like it's subtle. It's showing it to you, yes, but I'm saying it's subtle in the sense that it doesn't call attention to it, which is something that that like movies nowadays don't do. They have to have some character in the movie say, "Oh my God, you're fucking Steve, aren't you?" And she's like, "Yeah, but don't tell Vic," you know. But in this movie, no, it's just literally her and him, and she's just like, "All right, and you go back to my husband now." And it's like, I appreciate that. Like it, I mean, because it sets up the dynamic in like one scene really quick. And you don't have to sit there and spend all that time on it.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
And then like and even like it does it again later with like Joe Camber and his wife or whatever, because like he comes in and he's like, "What the fuck is that out there in the barn?" And she's like, "Oh, it's, you know, for engine, you know, whatever thing or whatever to hold the engine block or whatever." And he's like, "Can't afford that." And she's like, "Well, I won the lottery." And he looks at her and he's just like, "All right." You know, like, so you get in that one moment, like the relationship, like, I mean, you know, like it's perfect. Like it doesn't need to spell out anything else between the two of them.
Yeah.
It does that a lot in this movie. And I give them credit for that because I mean, that kind of shorthand is really what movies are supposed to do. They're not supposed to spell out everything. A novel will, because it has to, but like movies, they can just show you a scene and like, you know, just the way that the actors like faces look. And you should get everything you need out of that, unless you're just total dumbass and you're not paying attention to the movie.
That or the actors aren't doing a good job. And I'm not ready to get into acting yet, but the actors did bring enough to this film to keep it going. I wanted to say this about the story before we move on, though, is that this is also one of those things. This is 100% possible. And that's what makes this movie so scary. Rabies is lack of maintenance, is just a lack of maintenance away of you not taking care of an animal and it running off into the wild, catching rabies and potentially going feral on you.
One scene in particular that rings so true in this movie, because if you've ever had a pet that's like on the verge of dying, you'll know this to be the truth. When animals, they don't want their, I don't know if it's because they don't want their owners or their, you know, to be upset or they don't want to bother them. They will find the, like lowest place they can get to and crawl underneath to die, to get away from their owners and not do it in front of them. Like most of the pets that we've ever had around here, you know that it's sick and you're like, where'd the cat go?
Yeah.
And you'll find it's like crawled underneath something to die. And it's like when Cujo gets underneath the porch in that one scene in the movie and he's sitting there kind of whining and whimpering, I'm like, that is the most realistic thing they could depict as far as like a pet just wanting to, you know, not show its owner how bad off it really is.
I actually had somebody tell me that our cat had run away. I don't know who, what, where, when, or why, but our cat had run away. And we were like, why would he just run? And our friend's like, "Oh, your cat's going to die." And I was like, "Excuse me?" And he's like, "Yeah, if you find your cat's going to die." And I was like, and they go, "Well, they run away. If it's for no reason, if this was always a cat that's always been fine with sticking by you guys and all of a sudden it just bounces, if you find that cat, it's going to die not very long." And it did. It died a few months later. And I was like, ugh. This is horrible. Yeah. He's like, it was sick and it just didn't want you to see it suffer.
Yeah, that's, and it really is. And I mean, that scene in the movie it's very true to life the way they showed that.
Poor
that
little Cujo. He tried so hard.
As far as the acting goes, I mean, they did a great job with the dogs, obviously.
I mean,
you know, except for the two scenes where they show the tails wagging, but.
Hey!
That's the editor's fault. That's not the dog's fault.
Yeah.
The dog was just doing what it was supposed to do. I'm saying the editor should have seen that and did something.
Could you imagine if, like, there was actors that were like that? They were all excited. They're stabbing, and they're like, "Oh, my God, I'm doing such a good job," you know?
You know who I can imagine doing that? Huh. Keanu Reeves.
Oh, my God.
Can you not imagine Keanu Reeves being like a happy dog?
Yeah.
Like he's in a scene, and he's supposed to be, like, all sad, and he's just, like, all smiles and, like, you know, just.
Fucking nailed it.
The kid does a really good job. Really fucking good job.
Was like, there was a couple of scenes where I was like, is this kid actually very terrified of that dog? It felt like the kid was absolutely horrified by this dog doing its job.
Well, even just the way he cries, because that's the one, when I put in there, the heart of the film is Tad.
Yeah.
That scene, I mean, okay, so I was going to say this a second ago, Pet Sematary, all that other stuff about the Wendigo and all the stuff that happens coming back, you know, whatever you believe in that stuff. but everybody can relate to the very real possibility because Stephen King almost had this happen to his own kid. That's the reason he wrote that scene of, you know, Gage Creed going out to the road in a semi killing the kid. Every parent has that fear in the back of their mind that something like that's going to happen to their kid. So it's very real. Well, in this movie, when Tad is in Dee Wallace's arms and he is screaming uncontrollably, first of all, like, his screams are hard to take, and I didn't even end up having kids because of, you know, stuff that happened, but that bothers me now as, you know, like a dad age to hear that, and her trying to comfort a kid, and like, she freaks out, and she actually gets mad, and I think she slaps him, or if she does it, she tells him to shut up, like, in a really loud way. Like, you can look at that and be kind of mad at her, but that is so realistic that, like, she would say that in that particular way to, you know, because, like, she's, her mind is frazzled too. And, like, she does, the kid's not responding whatsoever. What's she going to do? Like, she's just freaking out, you know.
Good old fashioned stun slap.
But if it wasn't for those scenes with Dee Wallace and then, and the kid in this movie, like, it wasn't hold nearly the impact it does because, yes, Cujo attacks that one creepy guy next door. He attacks Joe. They're okay. I mean, if you go back and watch them now, really you don't see much because it's all shaky cam to kind of cut away from the dog being, I mean, they probably couldn't get the dog to look as terrifying when it was attacking because, I mean, it's a good boy, you know, in real life.
He's a cutie patootie.
So they had to cut away from it, so you just see a bunch of shaky cam. But them in the car, while the dog is outside, that is what actually puts the fear in this movie.
Yeah, Cujo, her, and the kid definitely carried the film. Like, this was a trifecta.
For sure. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the guy who played the father because for, you know, a jilted husband
but who's actually trying to do the right film.
But he's out of the movie about basically, you know, halfway through it. So
this was a mom's courage, a mom's strength. It's a mama bear story, honestly. If you think about it, what she had to go through. I don't see myself surviving this. She looks tinier than I am. And because I would become desperate and I would have to start making some decisions that I don't think I would have the strength to get through.
Even the scenes where she gets attacked by Cujo and the screams that she puts on.
Yes.
I mean, they sound real.
Oh,
I'm
my
sorry,
God.
But they do. I mean, so if you want to talk about acting, it is totally the kid. It's totally Dee Wallace. And of course the dog, you know, that's where the acting is at.
Yeah. It was really, really good. I think everything, even the side characters really brought a lot to the movie, like the mechanic, not the mechanic, but like the neighbor that got attacked, you know, like, oh, you could never get that dog to attack me. And surprise, surprise, you know? And then of course the dad, the mechanic dad, he came off grimy.
Yeah.
So he must have been abusive in some sort of way.
That's what they hint at in the movie, that he's, if not for his kid necessarily, although there's a little bit of that implied too, definitely toward his wife. He's abusive toward her verbally and maybe even physically.
Exactly. Also, Cujo is a example of lack of preventative maintenance because the vaccine for rabies has been around since the 1800s, which is fucking insane to me, but that's a thing. And he just was not being maintained. He didn't go to the vet. Like, they didn't think they'd had to, you know?
Well, also, they set it up in the movie. They give you a perfect reason why. If Joe, the mechanic, was bitching about the cost of that one thing that would actually help him in his job, of course he's going to bitch about the cost of a veterinarian bill to, you know, get Cujo's rabies shot.
Exactly, and it was the death of him, so... prostitution, I mean, rest.
I'll even throw in one more scene that I think is interesting. That's both story and acting. You know, I'll give him credit. The mailman, when he's first talking to Vic, and he comes out of the, you know, the one mechanic's, you know, that's saying he's too busy for, you know, Vic. When he looks at him, he tells him to go up to Joe's place. And then he points at the one mechanic he just came out of, shakes his head, and kind of gives that, like, you know, you don't want to go here anyways. And I just like it because it's, like, perfect. Like, I mean, that's kind of shit you would see somebody actually do.
Oh, 100%,
like, don't go this guy. He's bad, you know. It's like – but there's a lot of that in this movie. I think they did a pretty good job of making it natural, like, as far as that stuff goes. The worst part of this movie is the music for me. absolute worst part of it.
Yeah, which you did say, because you said it sounded like a made-for-TV kind of soundtrack. It does.
It's like it's really like flowery. Yes. And like, I mean, it's just like, you know, that sort of thing. And it's, I don't know. I did not care for it whatsoever.
What about the Cujo attack scenes? I felt that the music was appropriate.
Those helped. Okay. I mean, but even in between that, there was a lot of that made for TV, like, yes, you know, after school special is what, yes, I would call it, type music.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I do agree with you on that. I think, however, it fit the time. Because I didn't notice it in any way that made me go, what the hell is going on here?
I would agree with you that it fit the time, but in a bad way. It reminded, yeah, me exactly of those after-school specials back in the day when we were kids around this time.
Oh, my God.
When I was just like, I'm like, okay, this movie is super dated. I mean, I can forgive, like, you know, like maybe being of its time, like we just talked about with the birds being clearly set in the 60s, and it looks like the 60s.
Yes.
I love the look of like that 70s, 80s because of the nostalgia or whatever for Cujo, but that music, like, I'm like, we had so much better. Like, we had John Carpenter fucking doing his thing during this time, and his music was perfect for movies. Like, I don't get this after school special shit for Cujo. Like, I just don't. And I bring up John Carpenter because he was actually offered, that's in the trivia, he was actually, okay, offered the opportunity to make this movie. He looked at it and he said, yeah, I don't like the idea of doing that movie. That sounds dumb. But then he made Christine, and it came out right before this. So,
damn, Christine's, I love actually Christine. Great. I love Christine. Christine.
It's a pretty fucking good movie, Christine. Yeah,
that's going to be good during Stephen King season.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to talk about? Because you were going to say something before I cut in about how bad the music is.
No, I think I'm ready to move on to trivia. Hold on. Let me go back to the music to see if there was anything. No.
Okay. The dogs featured in the film would often have their tails tied down, like I said, because the animals would visibly enjoying themselves so much they would wag their tails during filming. This tactic was missed once in the editing. It's actually, I saw it twice, so they could say whatever they want to. Where one shot clearly shows Cujo from behind growling and supposedly ready to attack, but wagging his tail energetically. Such is also the case about 54 minutes in, after Cujo has finished his first kill, the dog must have broken out of its tail restraint as it's wagging it unusually low, but yet happily. Aww. So that's the two times that I saw it, was those times. They used 5 St. Bernards, 1 mechanical head, and a man in a dog costume. I'm assuming the mechanical head was at the beginning with the bat, and also maybe later movie whenever they had to have it, but The man in the dog costume would just be hilarious.
Oh, have you seen, have I showed you the pictures? It is fucking hilarious.
You need to send them to me.
Oh, like, hell yeah. That. I'm going to send you. Okay, while you're going through this, I'm going to look it up because it is hilarious.
So get this. Danny Pintaro actually bit D. Wallace's fingers during his seizure scenes. Her reactions in that scene were very real.
Oh, shit. Okay.
The foam around Cujo's mouth was made out of a concoction of egg whites and sugar. The dogs caused problems on set by constantly licking it off because it tasted so good to them.
Oh, my God.
Stephen King has admitted several times that he was so deep into his alcohol addiction that he does not remember writing the book. And this was before his cocaine addiction, which is why he made Maximum Overdrive. And he was inspired to write this story when he met his mechanic's intimidating dog while having his motorcycle repaired.
Oh, shit.
After the film, Dee Wallace went on record saying that she hoped she never saw another Pinto in her fucking life.
Oh, my God. You know. It was a small little area. You know, I kind of want to back up just a tiny bit because you're talking about the dog that Stephen King based this off of. The acting in this film when she was just terrified of this big dog, and I understand that's a real thing. I've never fucking understood it. And that's why I will die super easily, because I'll see a big, huge dog and be like, puppy, and it's going to rip my face off.
It depends on where you're at.
I don't think so. The dog didn't give her any indication that she had to be worried.
It did not in this movie, and I'll grant you that. But if you're at a mechanic, like this, a country mechanic, if you're at, say, like a junkyard, if you're, say, at like a, I hate to say it, but a place in the ghetto, they train their dogs to attack and kill. So if you see a big dog, especially, I hate to say it, a pit or a rot, I mean, it's probably a bad dog because it's got bad owners. It's just how it is.
Which Cujo
those are some
did.
Of the sweetest dogs out there when they're raised right, but a lot of people buy them for the wrong reasons and just for, like, you know, if they're drug dealers, they want something that will attack anybody who comes in on them. And you're asking for it if you get around those dogs. You just are, you know.
Okay, but there was literally a kid scruffing him up. Like, you don't have to
worry
about
it. That's what I said in this movie. Yeah. It's a different story. But I'm saying in real life, that would have been the area where you would have suspected the dog being a bad one.
Treated Cujo like a secondhand citizen. Also, I sent the picture in the Death Holler Discord. Speaking of Cujo, my dog, I shit you not, is outside my door just scratching and crying to come inside, which is hilarious. And he's usually a good boy, but I just can't have him in while recording. He'll come and start into the microphone and everything. We don't need that negativity in our lives right now.
Oh my God, that's horrifying. Anyway.
That shit's hilarious and you know it.
They're doing the can-can, folks. Her and what's that? The guy on the side looks like her husband, that Steve Kemp guy.
Yeah, right, I think baby? It is.
But anyways, it's Dee Wallace, and then somebody with glasses and a goatee on one side, and then the guy in the dog suit in the middle, and they're all doing the can-can.
Yeah.
A Rottweiler was used for some of the scenes because they couldn't get the St. Bernard to look mean enough, so they had to use a Rottweiler instead.
Aww.
Young star Danny Pintaro was only 6 years old at the time of the movie and had not learned how to even read yet.
Whoa.
He would often have to memorize his lines from the script with the help of his mother, who was always close by on location.
Aww.
I mean, the kid was a good actor. I mean, he really was for his age. I mean, considering how young he was.
Yes.
Stephen King contributed substantially to the script, but eventually declined a Writers Guild credit for the movie. Stunt double Gene Coulter was in the car and had one of the toys used by the dog's trainers as a lure. When the window was partially down, the dog jumped up, put his paws on the window, forcing it down, and he reached for the toy. Jeannie's reaction was to lower the toy, and the dog actually bit her nose. Aww. She was treated at a hospital and released. There was a rumor at the time that she was bitten by a rabid dog, but that was entirely incorrect. But it's funny given the circumstances.
Cinematically, she was. Realistically.
Yes. Star Dee Wallace has often been praised by parents for the scene where she hysterically screams at Dad. Yes. In a moment of frustrated terror. She says it's a scene in which only a parent could identify.
100%. 100%. When you're a mom in any situation where you have to use your brain and your kids are having a full-blown panic attack, I have been there sometimes because it works fine with dads. Dads have the dad voice. You know, and you can get a kid to calm down super easily. But when moms lose it, kids don't expect it. You'll get that cry where nothing's coming out of their mouth. Where you can't hear anything. It's just the, you know, open mouth.
Because, you mean like Lydia from the Birds after she saw the one guy's eyes?
Exactly. Because my kids do not expect me to raise my voice. I'm usually actually the kind of the mom that threat you with a lower voice. Like, you do that shit one more fucking time. I swear to God, you know? But when I raise my voice, whole different level. My kids have melted. So you got to do what you got to do as a mom. And I 100% in that situation probably would have slapped my kid too to get that stun. And like, okay, you're going to get it together or else we're going to die. Because his noises were not helping.
They's just making things worse, like a lot worse.
Absolutely.
Donna takes Tad into the house for his nap after Vic fails to fix the car. The camera moves to a view of the woodlands and ocean in front of the house. The woodland area is the same location where The Howling was filmed, ooh, also starring Dee Wallace. So the woods next to their home was where The Howling was filmed.
That's hella funny.
At one point, the script for Cujo came to acclaimed director John Carpenter, but he passed on directing as he didn't find the story particularly appealing. Instead, he opted for Christine, which came out the same year as Cujo. So there you go.
I don't think that Cujo needed an extravagant soundtrack. I just don't.
Well, it wasn't just for that. They were going to have him direct the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Carpenter could have played into the horror better than the guy.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I don't know if Carpenter could have, I mean, because this might have been in the script. It might have been Dee Wallace's, you know, interpretation. And it could have been overrode, actually, if Carpenter, because he's very direct in what he wants. I don't know that Carpenter could have got the same realistic performance out of Dee Wallace in that car as what this director did.
Yeah.
Because because Carpenter, like, if you think about the movies where he's got, like, kids and, like, mothers and stuff in them, and there's not a lot that I can think of, because he usually doesn't fuck around with movies that have kids in them. I don't think that I just don't see it in him that he could have gotten that kind of portrayal out of her.
I agree. I also, like, how do you direct a dog? You know, well, whoever
that's the other thing, I think he might have like said fuck it because he couldn't see a good way to get that dog to do what he needed it to do.
Probably the dog and the kid.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Because that's what they always say as a director. It's like two of the things you never want to have to direct in a movie is a kid and an animal. And this director got both. So,
yeah.
The original novel was a sequel of sorts, like I said, to The Dead Zone. I've already kind of covered that. They were developed at the same time, the movie The Dead Zone and this, and the film's released, and this film released 2 months before The Dead Zone, but they were released by two different studios. This movie was originally going to have the references in it. It was going to have Frank Dodd. It was going to have the stuff about Sheriff Bannerman and all that, but when that other movie came out, they were like, well, another studio owns the rights to that, so we're just going to leave it alone.
Yeah.
So it was going to be tied into The Dead Zone before that other studio got it.
Interesting.
Stars Dee Wallace and Christopher Stone were married, like I said. He died in 1995 from a heart attack.
Wow.
That's sad for her.
Yeah.
A rumor was circulated that Cujo is an ancient Indian word, meaning unstoppable force. Aww. In reality, Stephen King named the dog after the code name of William Lawton Wolf, one of the founders of the Symbionese Liberation Army. Wolf's code name was actually spelled Kajo, K-A-H-J-O-H, which was misreported by the media as Cujo. So that's where it comes from.
Okay, I like that.
Todd has a stuffed St. Bernard in his room early in the film, if you look. Director Lewis Teague was recommended by Stephen King himself after seeing Teague's previous film, Alligator. So we're going to be seeing another Teague film, I guess, this year. First film to take place in the fictional town of Castle Rock, which go on to feature Dead Zone, Stand By Me, The Dark Half, and Needful Things. Rob Reiner, who directed Stand By Me and produced Needful Things, also named his production company Castle Rock.
Yes, Castle Rock Entertainment.
The St. Bernard, God, Rob Reiner is such a friggin' political idiot in real life, but we'll leave that alone. he is very much a demented lefty.
Oh,
the St. Bernard that was featured the most in the film died of bloat during the production. Aww. That's really sad.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
Poor baby.
After the film came out, the popularity of the St. Bernard breed noticeably declined. People didn't want to have anything to do with these dogs after that.
You know, but then Beethoven came out, and I'm sure it went up after that. Yeah, I was
going to say Beethoven probably helped a little bit.
Yeah.
The St. Bernard dogs playing Cujo, there was four of them, as well as the Black Labrador in costume, were nothing like their screen portrayal and were all really friendly.
Oh, they were certified good boys and or possibly
You can tell that by their tail wagging those two scenes. Dee Wallace later said that this film was the hardest thing she'd ever done, and it's the film she's proudest of. You know how far you can break down? When do you break down? How do you break down? It was just relentless. At the end of it, they treated me for exhaustion for 3 weeks.
Damn.
I'm still on adrenal supplements because I just blew out all my adrenals. People don't understand that when an actor goes through any of that kind of emotional stuff, your body chemically goes through it exactly like you were in fight or flight for your own life. I was in maximum fight or flight for weeks. She was treated for exhaustion for 3 weeks after filming this. So,
was she method acting?
What's that?
Was she method acting?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's why it seems so realistic, because she was really in that frame of mind. So we have Tippi Hedren, who was in the hospital for a week after, with exhaustion because of everything. And then we have Dee Wallace, who's in there for 3 weeks and still has adrenal problems because she went through so much, during these scenes.
Good Lord. Oh, fuck. Did you hear my dog crying? He is out there yelping like he's dying. I swear to God. So funny. He knows I'm talking about another dog.
He does. This movie was part of a mini cycle of dog attack pictures, which had been a staple of the mid to late 70s. Those canine attack movies included Dogs from 76, Dracula's Dog,
aww,
a.k.a. Zoltan, Hound of Dracula from 78, The Pack in 77, Mongrel in 82, White Dog in 82, Cujo in 83, and Rottweiler Dogs of Hell in 83.
Wow. Just giving all kinds of dogs bad names.
Credited screenwriter Lauren Currier was in reality actress and writer Barbara Turner, mother of Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh, interesting.
In the original Stephen King novel, Tad Trenton dies of dehydration while Donna contracts rabies from her fight with Cujo. There is also a rabies scare following the incident, which is not mentioned in the film, and meaning more people got rabies after this. And then the outcome of Vic's efforts to save the Sharp account are not mentioned either, but in the book, he actually saved it. So that's one bit of good news.
Oh, I mean, woo!
His son died and his wife's got rabies, but he saved the account.
What happens when people get rabies?
So you can take the shots if you're just bitten, and I don't know how many days in you got. Yeah. It's not long.
I thought it was 72 hours.
Yeah, it's probably right. And so, and I'm pretty sure in the book, it's longer than that.
Yeah.
So you're pretty much doomed to die if you don't get them within the 72 hours, because there's nothing they can do to cure them at all.
Yeah.
Stephen King did say later on that if he go back and change any of his books, he'd be letting Tad live. That's why he survives in the movie, blah, 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 blah. Stephen King cites this film as having the most effective scare of any of his movies based on his works, referring to the jolting scare where Cujo first leaps at the passenger window of the car when they first break, shut the car off. The fog in the scene where Brad encounters a sick Cujo was created by a naval fog machine. The smoke brought by the local fire brought out the local fire department, who feared that the woods were actually burning. And then the scenes where Donna and Tad are trapped by Cujo are supposed to be sweltering hot and appear that way on film, yet the conditions were actually very cold. They would run heaters in between filming, but they had to shut them off while they were filming because they would pick up the sound from the heaters in that small area. So I'm going to go first. I hate to say this, but it's at best a 3.8 for me. And it's the music mixed with the fact that the best part of the movie is literally the last third of it. I mean, it's don't get me wrong. You need the family dynamics, and I appreciate everything that goes on with it. But it's that last third of the movie that everybody talks about with this. It really is. The scenes, if it's even the last third, it might be the last quarter. But the scenes with her in the car with her son and the dog, if you ever talk about Cujo, it's those scenes that everybody talks about. I mean, there are scenes leading up to it where you see the dog getting progressively sicker.
Yes.
But he's still a good boy at that point. He's not scary at that point. He looks scary because he's so sickly, but he doesn't act that way. It's that last part that really, makes him the killer that everybody remembers him to be. So 3.8 is the best I can do because it really, you're waiting on the last part of the movie to really kick in.
I'm not too far away from you. I'm at a 4.0. I don't think it deserves to be in the threes, but it also is not a five movie. It's good and scary, though. Like, I think that there's the build up to what's going on with Cujo and everything. It might be a little bit slow, but I think it's effective. I didn't even notice the music, really, and that says a lot. But I'm also, like, I've seen this movie so many times, but I was also super excited to see Cujo again. And, like, see how bad of a dog is he really? And he's just, I don't know, it's probably a me problem. He's just not that scary to me.
Well, that's the other thing, too. He's not when you go back and watch it as an adult, but as a kid, he really is.
And there was just everything that happened in this movie, which is, in defense of my client, is not his fault. He was not maintained. He did not get his rabies shots. Had he had those, it would have prevented what happened. He is a product of his surroundings and the people who were taking care of him and where he lived. So he didn't deserve, he did have to get put down. Like, I understand that part, but he did not deserve the treatment he got. What?
I'm just thinking about how the kid died in the book. And so you could say,
himself. He needed a Snickers. He's not himself when he's hungry. Okay.
Okay. Your defense is weak, but I will give you the fact that it was preventable, and so that does mitigate some of it. Yes.
Now with the birds, I don't know that there was any way they could have prevented that.
They could have done shit because how they gonna keep the birds from eating the fish that ate the algae? I mean, come on, you know.
That's true. You know what I was thinking about the birds? This is off topic, a little small tangent. Is like, do you think that so let's use the scene where Tippi Hedren gets out of the, you know, they pull her out of the room. She went up, investigated by herself. She fucked around. She found out. And clearly a few birds got out. Do you think those birds were not part of the gang? Like, they didn't eat the bad tuna? And they were like, what the fuck is going on with my family? Like, why is Bert acting like that?
And those three birds went on to be the three, what is it, the Disney ones? The three caballeros? Or the three amigos, caballeros, whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Even in real life, you think some of the birds are like, why the fuck are you acting like that, Carl? What is your problem? And Carl's just up here like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You would think that some of the birds, but also birds, they don't break formations. So they were probably like, all right, if the leader is flying down on this little kid's face, I guess I will too. You know?
Okay. And that's what I was wondering. I'm like, is that okay? But, and then of course, Cujo, just going back to Cujo, we're just dealing with rabies and oh my God, I can't even imagine what that poor dog's going through.
Rabies is fucking scary. I mean, I said, there is no cure. You have, like you said, a few days to get excruciatingly painful.
It says that it's never too late to start the series of vaccinations. So it says the rabies vaccine should be given as soon as possible after exposure, ideally within 24 hours. However, this is according to Google, it's never too late to start the vaccinations. And then it goes on to describe the regimen, which a single dose is given on the first day, and then 4 doses giving on days 0, 3, 7, and 14.
It is supposed to be excruciatingly painful.
Don't they do something and through the belly button, allegedly?
There is, it's all around the belly button. That's a misnomer in a sense. Even if there is that much time, I have read that once you start, you get to the hydrophobia, you're a goner. Like they can say what they want to, but the hydrophobia is the cutoff point. When you start foaming at the mouth and you get to the point where you are avoiding water, there is no saving you at that point. Oh, like shit. It's literally a death sentence.
Do people go crazy too?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I've ever read any cases about humans with rabies, to be honest with you, when they get to that point. They do get aggressive because, I mean, their brains are literally frying. I mean, they're dying of dehydration on top of that.
Reverend, rabies is estimated to cause 59,000 human deaths each year in over 150 countries. And this is likely an underestimate due to underreporting and uncertain estimates.
It's fucking scary.
It's almost always fatal. So you're right. Once the symptoms appear, it's almost always fatal, but it can incubate for years before it shows up. Let me see. Symptoms of rabies include fever, headache, excessive salivation, muscle spasms, paralysis, mental confusion. So they do go crazy. That's wild. That's a lot of people.
Yet another way that if it mutated could lead to zombies. Ugh. It all leads back to zombies, just saying.
Baby rabies.
But yeah, I don't. So there is another Stephen King movie that we will be reviewing this year that is way higher on my rating list. And I have watched it way more times and it scares me a lot more and scared me even more as a kid. Because my other aunt on my other side, you know, the family showed me that movie. But let's just say whenever let's just say Dead's Better. Let's just leave it at that.
Oh, shit. If that didn't give it away, I don't know what would.
But I much prefer that movie to Cujo. Don't get me wrong. Cujo has its place. It's a good Stephen King adaptation. I gave it 3.8, but holy damn, that other movie is so much better in my opinion.
Did you see that I had thrown in the remake too?
Unfortunately, yeah. I did.
I had to throw in the remake. We had
to. God, it's so bad though. It's so bad.
There's a lot of movies we're going to be reviewing this season that are bad. So bad that Cody's like, I don't even want to be a part of this season. It's like, well, tough. You're gonna.
Yeah, I know.
And you better not give anything away. You better not been like, well, Raina liked this film or Raina didn't like this film. It's going to be like, oh, well, what did you guys think? I don't know. You're going to have to listen, Cody.
He literally just listened to our Savage Land episode because he was telling me about that this morning. So,
oh, shit.
He was very proud of you for that one, though. He said that he did not expect you to be that high in a movie that is so, like, surrealistic, you know, because the way they depict the, you know, the zombies in that movie with the still shots. He said he was really proud of you. And he mentioned that your little story about your trip to Victoria's Secrets was also a plus. So
wait, what was that? I don't remember that story.
I don't remember it either. I just remember you did have a story about that. And he said thumbs up for that.
Oh,
like,
my okay. God. You'll have to remind me. I completely forgot about that. Wait, was that in Savage Land?
Yeah, you said it was in Savage Land.
Maybe so. I got to go listen to my own review to remember that. Hey, guys, if you want to hear me talk about Victoria's Secret in any capacity, go check out Savage Land from last season.
Go watch the movie, too. It's pretty good.
Oh, God, it's such a good movie. Yeah. Real good movie.
But, yeah, so next movie is Werewolf, mm-hmm. and we are covering American Werewolf in London. Were we covering another werewolf movie this early?
Yes, we were. Hold on. I have it pulled up right now. We're watching, American Werewolf in London. So we're giving it real original, but also the original Wolfman from 1941.
That is correct. The original Wolfman. So there you go.
Yep.
Oh, that's, and then from here on out, we will try to time the release to the full moon for the rest of the season. We have clearly missed it this time, but.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to swap, I need to swap the full moon movies to the beginning of the season or of the month where we're recording at beginning of the month. But that way I have it in the fucking bag ready to go, you know, for the full moon.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the full moon is usually around the 12th or the 13th, anywhere between the 12th and the 15th, I should say. We got ourselves a full moon.
And what is this official full moon called for January?
For January, it's called the Wolf Moon.
Appropriately. For the Wolfman.
Exactly. So we got every month we got a different type of full moon and a different date. So.
All right. Anything else you want to say about Cujo, since this is primarily the movie that I know made you want to do this season? So
yeah, Cujo is a certified good boy.
I want to throw it out there that Jason never officially killed any dogs in any of his movies. There was one dog that disappeared from part two, I believe it was, never to be seen again, but there was no hint that Jason killed that dog. Yes. So. And the dog for the you know, Corey Feldman's family in part four, it got away. Yes. He let it live. So Jason is a friend of the dogs.
Yes. Little Frederick Krueger is not.
He is not. Frederick Krueger also might molest children, so let's not leave that out of the equation. He's not a good guy, folks, at all.
Mm-mm. He is tattooed on the inside of my arm currently.
You know what's funny about Chucky, though? Mm. All the bad shit that Chucky did, I mean, literally all the bad shit that he did, they implied on the TV show that he's a friend, that he supports trans rights, so somehow it makes him a better person. I'm not even lying to you. That's what they imply. I'm like, okay, so he basically kept a woman. If you remember, you know, this was in one of the newer ones. I think it was Curse of Chucky. It was Curse. He kept a woman tied up that was pregnant, stabbed the baby while he was in there, maybe did other things to the woman on top of it because he wanted her to be his bride or whatever before Tiffany. He did all that bad stuff, but yet it's okay because he supports trans rights.
We generally don't care about that stuff at all. Like, we're not against it so much, but, like, are you serious? You can't just be good to one generalization of people and then, like, oh, well, I'm not a monster, and then fucking just ravage other people.
That's my point. Like, if he would have been, like, an actual decent person and then supporting trans rights. Hey, good for you, buddy, that you do your thing. But, like, we have a serial killer here. A fucking serial killer.
No.
Oh, well, he supports trans rights.
I don't want any fucking serial killer being like, I support Latinos. And I'm like, excuse me? I beg your finest fucking pardon. You, I'm glad you like Hispanic people. It means I have a higher chance of living. But like, are you serious right now? Well, I'm a good person because I like Latinos or the Latinx community.
I mean, we're not defending Jason Voorhees, the little swamp retard that he is. I mean, you know, the truth of the matter is he killed a bunch of, you know, teenagers. Some of them maybe deserved it, but the majority of them probably didn't. But we're just saying he didn't kill animals. So, I mean, but that he doesn't support animals necessarily.
Yeah.
He never stated that. So
we're not saying, like, fucking go on that date with him. No. Jesus.
Or don't write to him, you know, while, you know, if he's ever captured like they did Ted Bundy. And because I just watched like a movie version of Ted Bundy. That motherfucker got 200 letters every day that he was in prison right before he was killed from women saying they loved him and that they wanted to have his babies.
Women be wild. I am a woman, let me state that, but we be wild sometimes.
Sometimes, I mean, good Lord. I mean, it's like, I know this guy's going to kill me, but, you know, and there's a scene in this movie. Of course, this is an exploitation movie, this Ted Bundy one that I watched from the 90s. It has Ted Savini in it at one point. He's a cop that captures him at one instance. There is a scene in the movie, and this probably happened in real life. You know those where they have those visits where somebody could come in and you sit in this common room and talk to them or whatever while the prison guards watch? You ever seen that in the movies or whatever?
Yes.
There is a prison guard standing in front so that nobody can see him of Ted Bundy and this woman who came in there to see him fucking literally in the common room where everybody around them, they're just like going at it or whatever because she's so wild for this serial killer, you know.
What the fuck, dude?
This probably happened. I mean, legit. Like, I mean, I didn't look into it, but I'm like, I can imagine this being a scenario.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tangent, I mean, coming back to Cujo, but this is the movie that I know Urena wanted to watch the most and why she suggested this season. Then we got to talking about some of the other movies like Night of the Lepus and all that.
Oh,
like,
man.
No, we gotta do something different. We gotta throw something else in there. So that's why you're getting American Werewolf in London and The Wolfman.
Yeah, we actually animal season almost didn't happen, and I was the one that was calling that. I was like, you know what? Don't know that I want to do this anymore. If it hadn't been for actually quite a few people, didn't even Cody say that it might save us if we did werewolf, or did you say Cody might come back if we do werewolf?
I told you that Cody might come back if we did werewolf.
Yeah, so like he gets at least one, if not two, per month of werewolf. My husband was like, hey, you know, you can throw werewolves in there, right? They are animals, and not only are they animals, they're bad animals. And I was like, oh, well, fucking, yeah, okay, let's just do that, because I don't even think that we'd have enough werewolf movies. We could. They would probably just be a lot of bad werewolf movies.
Yeah, there is a lot of bad ones. So, I mean, we could always there are a few that we might be able to throw back in if we do, like, you know, say, like a Universal Monsters season or something, because we're technically leaving out the best werewolf in Monster Squad. I mean, he has nards. It's confirmed in the movie, and he gets kicked in them, and that actually saves the kids. So I'm just putting that out there. You know?
And that is, oh, my God, I remember that. I used to watch that all the time. Noah, didn't Noah say it didn't age well?
Yeah, he says it doesn't age well. Crazy. I don't get that because I love that fucking movie. And Cody watched it recently and he liked it. The only thing he didn't, and it's the first time he'd ever seen it, and the only thing he didn't like about it was that he felt the mummy got shit upon in the movie because all he does is walk slow, and then he gets that scene where the wrapping gets pulled away from him and he's nothing but a skull or whatever.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't know. What were you expecting? It's a kid's movie. Like, what were you expect? How were you expecting that to age better than it did when we were kids? Like,
I still think it holds up for a kid's movie. It just like Cody said, it is the Goonies.
Yes.
But in a monster movie.
Oh, it is.
That's
literally
what it is.
Speaking of that, I should probably have my kids watch it and give their input. They're teenagers now, but like, I feel like they would like it, or they would at least appreciate it.
Yeah, I think they could appreciate it even if they didn't like it.
Exactly. You know? So, anywho.
All right, folks. With that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.